I'm Haley B. Miller, and this is Ohio Politics Explained, a podcast where you give us 15 minutes and we give you all the news you need to sound smart and impress your friends. Welcome back to Ohio Politics Explained, the primary recap edition. This week, we're breaking down everything that happened during Tuesday's election, from a very heated U.S. Senate race to what happened down ballot in Ohio State House races. Joining me today to dissect it all and what it all means for November is Jesse Ballmer.
Thanks. Happy post-election day.
Always a good time. Lots of coffee.
All the caffeine, and I did not have to drive back from Cleveland.
Let's start off with the top of the ticket, which is by far the least interesting thing that happened on Tuesday. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump won the state of Ohio as part of the presidential primary race. Duh. I mean, this just wasn't unexpected. And even before Tuesday's election, both Biden and Trump already had the numbers they needed to secure the nomination.
Yeah, correct. There have definitely been years where Ohio was a deciding force in the primaries, and this just wasn't it. We were a couple weeks behind Super Tuesday. Nikki Haley was really the last remaining challenger to Donald Trump, and she only won one primary in Washington, D.C. So I think that really contributed to turnout in Ohio, that there wasn't that like marquee race on the top of the ticket for both Democrats and Republicans. But sometimes that happens.
What did the numbers end up looking like? I think at one point I looked and Nikki Haley had gotten like 15% of the vote or something.
Yeah, I think Haley ended up with like 14% of the vote. And then on the Democratic side, about almost 13% didn't vote for Biden. Negligible, but it at least shows some Ohio voters are not excited about the incumbents and presumptive nominees here.
We're not going to dwell on this too much longer. If you're interested in Ohio's role in the presidential race in 2024, we had a special episode a week or two ago. I talked with Kyle Kondik, a pretty plugged in political observer from Ohio, and you can nerd out on that topic there. So let's pivot to the U.S. Senate race. Bernie Moreno won the Republican primary on Tuesday night. And it really wasn't close, even though polls and a lot of chatter leading up to the election suggested that Matt Dolan might give him a run for his money. But Moreno came away with 50% of the vote and got a big boost in the end from former President Donald Trump, who campaigned in Ohio over the weekend, had endorsed him, and really had a vested interest in making sure his guy got over the finish line.
Certainly. I mean, I think you know this better than I do as a person who covered the race, but this was a pretty sleepy one until maybe the last couple of weeks. And we saw, you know, back and forth endorsements. You had former Senator Rob Portman and Governor Mike DeWine endorsing Matt Dolan, kind of indicating maybe there could be some sort of an establishment traditional GOP vote in this race. But ultimately, there just wasn't. Like, sometimes the simplest analysis is the correct one. And the simple analysis is Donald Trump's endorsement is gold in Ohio. And that played out for Moreno and certainly played out for J.D. Vance as well.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of 2022 because Dolan ran that year as well. And I remember near the end, he was gaining in the polls and everyone was like, is he going to do it? Is he going to defy Trump? And we all asked that same question heading into Tuesday, but he only came away with a third of the vote. He attributed the loss to turnout. As you noted, turnout was pretty low, but the Trump endorsement is big. And backers of Moreno also say that, you know, they think a lot of people underestimated Moreno's electability.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. This was a really interesting part of the race, but we're turning to an even more fascinating part of this race, which is going to be Moreno versus the sitting Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown. And this is really going to be like a matchup of the century, maybe too much, a matchup of the decade.
It's certainly going to be a competitive race. And we got a sneak preview on election night of the pitches that both Moreno and Brown are going to make ahead of the general election. You heard Moreno really trying to associate Brown with President Joe Biden, you know, saying that Brown votes with Biden's interests most of the time. You had Brown saying, look, Republicans are on the wrong side of issues like abortion, minimum wage, and, you know, these guys are just too extreme and can't be trusted, according to him.
Yeah. And I mean, Senator Sherrod Brown has been the most successful Democratic politician for many years in Ohio here. He's also had the benefit of being on some years that were really good for Democrats. 2006, there was, you know, obviously what's happening on the presidential side, but there was corruption cases on the Republican side in Ohio. And 2012 certainly helps to be on the ticket with President Barack Obama. So it'll be really interesting how this plays out going forward. Expect plenty of ads, plenty of money. If Ohio isn't really in the center of the presidential race, it will at least be in the center of this Senate race.
So many ads. So Sherrod Brown was unopposed in the primary this week, but Democrats did have a statewide primary for the Ohio Supreme Court race. Appeals Judge Lisa Forbes ended up winning that contest after she was endorsed by the Ohio Democratic Party a few months ago. That really gave her the boost that she needed to get over the finish line. And while, you know, that race really wasn't that high profile, not that surprising, that primary sets up what's going to be a really interesting set of state Supreme Court races.
Yeah, so the Ohio Supreme Court races are going to be really fascinating. We're setting up for three different challenges. You're going to have two current justices going against each other, Republican Joe Dieters versus Democrat Melody Stewart. But you're also going to have challenges to sitting Justice Michael Donnelly, who's a Democrat. And then you're going to have this race between Forbes and the Republican challenger there. So the balance of the Ohio Supreme Court is important for a variety of reasons. They decide many, many different cases. But in particular, Ohioans approved a ballot issue in November that looks at abortion rights and access to other reproductive decisions. Those decisions are going to ultimately end up at the Ohio Supreme Court. And so that's one issue, certainly redistricting and the drawing of the lines and whether or not they were drawn to favor one party or another ended up at the Ohio Supreme Court quite a bit. But everything from like how long sentences should be and how law should be interpreted. So these are important races and you're going to see a lot of attention on them.
And worth noting, too, that this will be the second election with party affiliation next to the names of candidates for Supreme Court and appellate court. In a presidential election year, I'm curious to see what this means for the final outcome, if people are just out there voting straight ticket, or if there's a little bit of nuance, a little bit of give and take over the different races. But, you know, Republicans have had control of the state Supreme Court for a really long time, and Democrats see an opportunity to flip the court for the first time in a while. Whether they get there, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of focus on these races from the Democratic side because they feel like they, you know, this is a safeguard that they need to have, particularly with Republicans controlling most statewide elected officials and the Ohio legislature. I remember looking at maps before the party labels were on there, and Sharon Kennedy, the current Chief Justice, is a Republican, but the maps were kind of all over the place, and you got to think like maybe people thought Kennedy was a Democratic name in some areas.
Yeah, that's interesting. So beyond these two statewide races, we had all sorts of primaries on Tuesday for congressional seats and Ohio State House seats. In the second congressional district, for example, we saw David Taylor winning the very, very crowded Republican primary there, which effectively means he's heading to Congress. It's a very Republican district. And so the primary is kind of the main step that he needed to overcome. Up in Northwest Ohio, State Rep Derek Marin won the primary in the 9th Congressional District, which, if you'll remember, that's the district that Marcy Kaptur represents and is expected to be a huge battleground in the fight for control of Congress in 2024.
Yeah, correct. I think your analysis of that was great. The second district is kind of in between Columbus and Cincinnati, a lot of parts of southern Ohio, and there's just like not really a viable path for Democrats in that particular district. I think Republicans knew that, and that's why there were so many candidates in that race versus Derek Marin, current state representative, is going to go against Marcy Kaptur. This district that Kaptur has before a couple rounds of redistricting stretched from Toledo all the way over to Cleveland, making it a pretty safe seat for Democrats. And that's just not the case anymore.
Now, I want to pivot to the state house races because there were a lot of really interesting Republican primaries for those. And these are typically races that don't get a ton of attention. What were some of your takeaways from what happened last night?
Yeah, so it's interesting. There were four different Republican incumbents and then one Democratic incumbent who lost their seats, who were unseated by challengers on election night. And that's pretty high. That's surprising, but it also reflects an internal battle that's been going on in the Ohio House of Representatives between those who supported the current House Speaker, Jason Stevens, and those that were upset about that because Stevens was able to win the gavel with support from both Republicans and Democrats. And so those supporters have faced everything from censure from the Ohio Republican Party to primary challenges to, you know, just like a nasty primary race. And so we're also setting up a future speaker battle between Stevens and current Senate President Matt Huffman, who was certainly supporting fundraising, you know, visiting with candidates in open seats in particular. So it's hard to tell what the ultimate balance of this is going to mean, because it also depends on whether these Republican candidates can defeat their Democratic challengers in November. How many of those lose on which side of the rubric could swing this a little bit?
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how that shakes out. And like you said, a lot of different factors at play. And the anti-Stevens contingent had some wins on Tuesday, but did not sort of pull out the walloping of Stevens' allies that they probably wanted to.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's hard to unseat incumbents just because they have pretty good name recognition. They're able to, you know, bring money and projects and support back to the district. So the fact that four of them were unseated was substantial, but there were certainly other candidates who were targeted for primary challenges that were able to succeed and pull it out. It's interesting, a member of House leadership, John Cross, lost pretty overwhelmingly in his district. So just another intriguing twist of the night.
And one more thing before you go. If you're interested in reading more about the election, checking out our analysis and that kind of thing, you can head to any of our websites for more information. And one quick procedural side note, election results are considered unofficial until the votes are canvassed by election officials in a few weeks. Ohio Politics Explained is brought to you by the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. You can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, @OhioExplained.